Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
You're welcome to Taking Stock on News Talk with me, Vincent Wall. This is where we take a wider view of the major shifts in the global economy and those closer to home. You can get in contact with me by emailing takingstock@newstalk.com or on Twitter @takingstocknt. Now we're going to start this week with Peter Spiegel, the US Managing Editor of the Financial Times. Peter, you're very welcome and thank you for joining us.
It's good to be back, Vincent.
Now the countdown is on to the inauguration of President-elect Biden next week, but he's already announced details of his immediate COVID recovery package, checks going out in the post to those citizens that need it, help for minority communities in particular, help for states and municipalities that need money fast, trillions of dollars in that package. But in terms of the wider regeneration package, economic stimulus package that his administration is planning, Peter, do you think they're going to try and push that through as quickly as possible, notwithstanding all the other distractions? One, because they now do have control of the Senate, which they need, and two, because the pandemic remains rampant, unfortunately, and unemployment remains relatively high.
Yeah, this clearly is their intention. But as you say, it's not going to be easy. I mean, part of the problem that has arisen now is suddenly we're going to have an impeachment trial in the Senate in the first weeks of his administration. So trying to push through an enormous stimulus package through at the same time as a trial is going on, there's moves in the parliamentarians' office in the Senate to try to do, you know, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. So that's a challenge. The other challenge, to be honest with you, is although they control the Senate and the House, The margin of majority in both chambers is incredibly narrow. They're actually 50-50 in the Senate, which means the Vice President Kamala Harris will be the deciding vote there. And depending on how a couple of open seats go in the House, we're sort of 4, 5, 6 seats margin in the House, which means that Biden wants to pull everything together in one big stimulus package. So, as you mentioned, the checks in the post, the aid to the states and the local governments, broader economic aid for businesses and whatnot. He has decided to go whole hog, one package, one big comprehensive deal, as opposed to going piecemeal. Let's do one piece of legislation on the checks. Let's do one piece of legislation for the state and local. And that is going to present challenges in both the House and the Senate. Because in order to get those through, he is going to need a lot of party discipline amongst his own party. And the Democratic Party is not known for party discipline right now. And you have a lot of sort of conservative Democrats, particularly in the Senate, Joe Manchin in West Virginia and the like, who are not necessarily up for huge turning on the tap spending right now. So it is clearly a priority. He is trying to get it through in his first 100 days. But the challenges of party discipline, but also managing this to push this through at a time when the Senate is going to be occupied with an impeachment trial, it's not going to be easy.
Do you think he will take the same approach to the wider economic stimulus package that he's planning in his administration for, you know, the trillions, as he has said himself, trillions of dollars in investment in new infrastructure, in the environment, in clean tech, that he will take the same approach that tried to put all the elements of that package at least together in paper before trying to get it through Congress?
I think he will. And again, if passes prologue on this, you know, I've covered Washington basically since the early 90s. And infrastructure legislation is always every congressman's favorite thing because they all get to put their pet projects in there. And so essentially what you'll have is the big stimulus package, which he wants to push through there very quickly. And then, as you mentioned, sort of infrastructure week. This is something that the Trump administration has been talking. It's infrastructure week every week for the last 4 years and never even proposed anything. Biden is now going to come forward with an infrastructure program that is expected to get bipartisan support for that very reason. If every congressman could sort of go back to their district and say, I got a bridge, I got a tunnel, I got a, you know, internet broadband in our neighborhood, in our district, that is popular with the voters at home. So I suspect that might actually even be easier to get through Congress because you have a lot of business interests and local congressmen on both sides of the aisle who are always very eager to bring the pork back home. And so that's probably for once they get the as you mentioned, the initial stimulus through, I think in many ways that might be easier because there's a lot more bipartisan support for that kind of thing.
And have most people forgotten about the scale of the U.S. national debt, Peter? $27 trillion and counting. Or is there a view that as there is through most of the Western world, that given what's happened because of the pandemic and given historic low interest rates, let's just spend.
Well, it's the odd thing about Trumpism, to be honest with you, because traditionally within the U.S. political system, it has been the Republican Party that was always the party of, for lack of a better word, fiscal soundness, right? They were the ones, the deficit hawks, certainly the Tea Party movement in the Republican Party, and frankly, even going back to Ronald Reagan, you know, although many of his budgets were out of balance, you know, he preached the gospel of balanced budgets and fiscal discipline. Under Donald Trump, those elements of the Republican Party have disappeared completely, and that even predates COVID. This was a party that I personally had expected some members of sort of the deficit hawks in the House in particular to push back on a lot of Trump spending plans, but they disappeared and didn't because of the dominance of the Trumpists within the party. It will be interesting to see whether you start seeing those fiscal hawks in the Republican Party, and there are a few in the Democratic Party, rear their head up. Now, frankly, given the pandemic, I suspect they are not going to reappear anytime soon. But you're right, and this is an issue that frankly, you know, Ireland has dealt with during the Eurozone crisis, and much of Europe dealt with during the Eurozone crisis. There comes a limit in terms of debt to GDP where the bond market starts saying, gosh, we don't want to fund your debt anymore. And you start seeing interest rates rising, and suddenly the even just the maintenance of the debt becomes such a huge portion of your annual budget that it becomes self-defeating. We're at about 100% of a debt to GDP ratio in the U.S. right now, which is a record, post-war record. There is going to be a time where we're going to have to deal with this, and there are already noises in Washington that we're going to have to deal with this at some point. But I suspect, as you said, like much of the West right now, the Fed has warned, the ECB has warned, all the big central banks have warned that the biggest danger is not doing enough on the fiscal side. And so I suspect you're going to see a huge bipartisan push to get these spending bills through this year. But I wouldn't be surprised if 2022 and further on is going to be the retrenchment age.
Noise on Wall Street as well already that this enormous stimulus package that's being planned, trillions of dollars, literally a T rather than the old B in front of billions, that it will start stoking inflationary fires. And we've seen the sell-off in US bonds already, the yield going up through 1% on them. But the Biden administration, probably through 2021 at least, will be supported by the Federal Reserve and by the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, in the sense that it's unlikely they'll taper back on their bond buying program at this stage and raise interest rates, even if inflationary pressures do begin to rise up a little?
I suspect so. As you mentioned, in the bond market, we've seen, you know, first the 10-year treasuries moved, the yield moved across 1% for the first time in months, just in after the Georgia result, which is, you know, the Democrats picked up two seats in Georgia in special elections that pushed them over the majority in the Senate. And it was interesting to me, frankly, if you looked at the reaction of the markets. I mean, we had a, you know, pick your word, an insurrection, a near coup in the Capitol, and the markets rose. And that is because the markets have been very much watching the debate you and I are having right now, which is, with the control of the Senate, we expect stimulus, and that's why the equity markets have risen, and you've seen bonds fall. And you know, I would just say that there has been, despite the moves in the bond market, we have not heard from the Fed yet saying that there's any willingness to pull back. Now, we've heard some voices in Congress worried about this. Again, this early stirring of some of the fiscal hawks who are worried that the Fed has been given sort of carte blanche to do whatever it wants in terms of bond buying and quantitative easing. But that has not, we have not heard any of that from the Fed yet. And I anticipate, although, you know, there are worries about inflation, we actually haven't seen any real signs of inflation. You know, many of the core components in what we look at in terms of CPI and inflation indices have not gone up. Certainly, you know, energy and fuel costs remain at historic lows because of, you know, lack of economic activity. So I although sort of, you know, you've seen movement in the bond market of people worried about inflation, these worries about inflation have come up, frankly, even pre-COVID, and for reasons that I think economists still struggle to identify, there has been no inflation despite some fears. So my feeling right now is the Fed is very much with its foot on the accelerator. They're not worried about inflation, even if there are signs in the bond market that some investors are.
Our guest here on News Talk is Peter Spiegel, the U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times. What about the economic team he's putting together, Peter, and as you mentioned earlier, the Democratic Party is not necessarily a unified party in many ways, and it has a hard left wing by US standards. What is their view of the team he's putting together? I see he's appointed Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, now as Labour Secretary, but apart from Janet Yellen, Cecilia Rouse, an economist at Princeton, is going to head his Council of Economic Advisors. A senior Wall Street figure, Brian Deese, formerly of BlackRock, is going to come in as head of the National Economic Council. He seems to be appointing very senior personnel, but also personnel that will reach out to the various elements of the Democratic Party and the communities that support it.
Well, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. I mean, he's been very careful on the economic team to sort of balance the factions within the party. There are sort of traditional, for lack of a better word, neoliberal sort of Clintonista, era, new Democrats, for lack of a better word, because that's a dirty word now in Washington, much like New Labour is in Britain. But there are sort of those traditional centrist Democrats that are making up that team. But he has also reached out, and some of the names you reached, to the far left of the party because of, as you said, there are elements with the party who are really demanding more progressive kinds of economics. This is why I think the Yellen nomination is the key one to look at, though. I mean, Yellen, although I think she has this image of a rather dowdy former Fed chairman, she comes from a rather progressive background. I mean, she was one of the few economists, serious economists, advocating paying attention to racial discrimination within the economy and racial differences within the economy, way back again in the 90s under Clinton, when she was on the chairman of the economic advisors under Clinton. So this is a woman who has a track record, paying attention to the labor market as well as inflation when she was at the Fed, right? These are things that she has advocated for years. And in many ways, she singularly is able to bring all these elements of the Democratic coalition together. And I think that's why Biden went to her. I know there's been a lot of hemming and hawing in Washington about Biden bringing back the old Obama team, and there's a bunch of boring retreads. But I think Yellen is actually a rather inspired choice for the exact reason you say, which is she alone has the bona fides, having been a pretty progressive economist throughout her early career, her academic career, and her career in the Clinton administration. She has the solid chops as a former Fed chair to give confidence to the more centrist elements and the pro-market elements in the Democratic Party. And she's able to bring all those elements together, even if some of the younger people on the National Economic Council and elsewhere in the White House are a more diverse group. So I think that she is the one to watch within the administration. And I think the reason Biden picked her is exactly for that reason.
If we could finish our conversation, Peter, by flipping the perspective just a little bit and the business and corporate relationship with the incoming administration. Now, a lot of U.S. companies are welcoming the fiscal spend that will come. It'll help their bottom line and their earnings as long as inflation doesn't get too high. And of course, we've seen the huge drawback even from those companies and those individuals who were high-profile supporters of Trump pulling back in a big way from the Trump brand. But part of the way the Biden administration is planning to at least partly fund these trillion-dollar stimulus packages is through higher corporate taxation and higher capital gains taxes on the wealthy. Might that be a relatively short honeymoon, do you think?
I think it has the risk of doing that. Now, to be honest with you, I am, in terms of our conversations we have had with sort of senior corporate executives in the U.S., there's far less concern, to be honest with you, about the corporate tax issue and the taxation issues, because a lot of what is being proposed by Biden is sort of rolling back to Obama-era tax levels. I mean, this is not raising taxes to levels that we saw back, frankly, even in the 70s and 80s. This is levels that were already pretty darn low internationally, by international comparisons, pre-Trump. So there are concerns about rising corporate taxes, but that's not the big issue I hear. The issue I hear is the regulatory side. There is much concern, particularly in the financial services community, about an administration coming in, being pushed by Bernie Sanders, being pushed by Elizabeth Warren, both of whom will be very prominent. Bernie Sanders will be chairman of the Budget Committee, for instance, in the Senate right now. Very prominent Democratic senators to be much more interventionist on Wall Street in particular, but also in the tech in Silicon Valley and on the tech companies in terms of regulating how they do their business, how they pay taxes, and that kind of thing. So I think the tax issue is something that the business community is watching out for, but I think there's much more concern on the regulatory side, because that is really where Trump sort of eviscerated, even more so than the Bush administration, the preceding, the last Republican administration we saw in Washington, really just kind of, you know, disassemble the administrative state, to use a phrase that Steve Bannon always threw out there. And I think that's where you're going to get, if there is a honeymoon with the corporate side, that's where you're going to see most of the pushback. I'll also note that usually, if you look at Obama and you look at Clinton, the last two Democratic presidents, there's usually an effort to bring in a big Wall Street hand or someone at least has some corporate experience. Biden really hasn't done that. He has gone much more for sort of policy people with political experience, people with academic experience. There's not an obvious person in this administration who's sort of the outreach person to business. You have Jeff Zients, who's the new COVID czar, who comes from private equity, but you know, he's doing COVID. He's not really doing sort of the broader economy. So I think that's something to watch out for, that relationship with corporate America, a corporate America that, let's be honest, up and until the invasion of the attack on the Capitol, still was pretty pro-Trump because of tax and regulation. That's going to be something that we're going to watch here quite closely. And I suspect, as you said, particularly on the regulatory era, that's going to be something that's going to be difficult for the president to manage.
And speaking of the regulatory area, do you think it will be a prime focus of the incoming administration to address the whole dominant position of the large tech companies? Because for various reasons, there seems to be bipartisan support for that.
I think it is something he wants to do. I mean, he's spoken rather loudly on this. There is a provision in U.S. law right now that allows the social media companies in particular to sort of not be sued for you know, things that they publish, essentially. And that's, Trump has actually pushed on this quite strongly in the waning days of his presidency. And it's something that a lot of people on the Democratic side of the aisle have pushed as well. Now, in terms of where it is in the cornucopia of priorities right now, again, what we are hearing is, although he is interested in doing something on this, the focus for the first 100 days in particular, and frankly, probably for 2021, is not going to be on this. It's not going to be on Wall Street regulation. It's not going to be social media regulation, tech regulation. It's going to be on the stuff we started our conversation with. It's going to be COVID, you know, making sure that there is money there for the vaccination rollout, that there's stimulus money there, that there's the infrastructure package gets through. And, you know, look, it's a different era right now, but what we have learned from normal presidencies and putting Trump aside, and if you look at the Obama presidency, if you look at the Bush presidency, if you look at the Clinton legacy, what you learn very quickly is that it's very difficult to get more than one or two big things through Congress early in your presidency. You know, Barack Obama focused on Obamacare, right? That was sort of his big thing. Bill Clinton focused on NAFTA, the big trade deal. And so I think it can be very difficult for Biden to do a big stimulus program, a big infrastructure program, and then go, I also want a big, you know, tech regulation package. Oh, and by the way, I also want a big Wall Street regulation package. Oh, and I also want a tax rise package. I think they have to prioritize. And what we're hearing initially is tech regulation and Wall Street regulation are a bit of a back burner thing right now. We're talking 2022 and perhaps later in the presidency. So there is bipartisan support for this. But again, in terms of prioritization for this administration, I don't think it's going to be a first 100 days kind of thing.
Fascinating months ahead, and let's all hope that they do get to focus on policy alone. That's Peter Spiegel, the U.S. Managing Editor of the Financial Times. Peter, thanks indeed for joining us.
My pleasure, Vince.
Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.